The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon. It is Thursday, September 30th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community, followed by another 60 minutes of Toker Talk Radio, our live interactive feature where we talk about all of the cannabis issues of the day. We are being broadcast here from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Portland, Oregon, or as we like to call it, Potland. And you can get our first hour as a podcast, the Normal Daily Audio Stash, through iTunes and our blog, stash.normal.org. Also joining me here on the last day of September, my good friend, the board op and engineer, Ganja Gandhi.
Thank you, thank you.
Can you believe September 30th?
I know,
it's already September. End of September.
I know, it's ridiculous.
We're entering the fourth quarter of 2010. Yep. I still feel like it's 1992.
Really?
Well, in my mind, I do sometimes.
In my mind, I feel like it's 1997.
Hey, normally we'd be introducing my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie, but she is off for the day. She is helping her friend at the Oregon Health and Sciences University get through her chemotherapy appointments.
Yep.
That's a beautiful thing.
Which is awesome,
man. That's,
yeah.
That's the way us in the cannabis community, we care and we share, man. So we're all about that. So
that's why we got a half ounce.
That's right.
Right now.
That's right. We share. So, Cannabis Carrie, you enjoy the show, and we'll see you tomorrow. On today's show, we've got our hemp headlines coming up after this first break. I'm going to be telling you all sorts of good news in today's story. First of all, a new study showing cannabis sales could yield $17 billion in annual savings and revenue. A new poll showing Prop 19 is more popular than any California candidate. And more reports and update from the Jovan Jackson jury. And finally, support from the Oregon Democratic Party for the Measure 74 dispensary measure. All good news coming up in our hemp headlines. In today's Daily Toker Tunes, it's Groovin' Thursday, so we get some music from John Doe Radio. He comes to us from Denver, Colorado, bringing us some more great music from Goose. I know you like Goose, right?
I do like Goose.
Yeah, we got some good Goose music coming up. And at half past the hour, we're going to play some more archived audio from the Normal National Conference that took place September 9th through 11th. This is from the Saturday Medical Cannabis Only Day, and it's a great presentation by Normal's own Deputy Director, Paul Armentano, about moving forward in medical marijuana from just taking care of symptoms, just symptom management, and moving on to actually disease prevention and curative properties of cannabis. It's a really fascinating discussion, and I hope you stay tuned for it. And at the end of the show, some radical ranting. Lately, President Obama and his supporters have been criticizing the professional left and the base, and we're just going to point out that they're just suffering from what we got a year ago in the chuckle. So all that and more coming up on Normal Show Live. Stick around. We're the voice of the marijuana nation. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carry.
Cannabis Carry is off today. I'm Radical Russ with your NORML Hemp headlines. Regulating cannabis sales could yield over $17 billion in annual savings and revenue, new study says. Treating marijuana as a legally regulated commodity would yield some $17.4 billion annually in cost savings and new revenue, according to an economic report published yesterday by the Cato Institute think tank in Washington, D.C. The report, entitled The Budgetary Impact of Ending Drug Prohibition, estimates that taxing the commercial sale of marijuana in a manner similar to alcohol would generate some $8.7 billion in annual revenue. The report further estimates that abolishing the marijuana prohibition would additionally yield approximately $9 billion in annual law enforcement savings. Full text of the entire report is available for download through our front page at normal.org. A previous 2005 study commissioned by NORML estimated that marijuana law enforcement cost taxpayers some $7.6 billion per year. A separate California statewide analysis published in 2009 by the State Board of Equalization and Taxation estimated that imposing retail taxes on the commercial sales of cannabis in California would yield approximately $1.4 billion in yearly revenue. An op-ed in favor of legalization by the Cato Studies co-author Jeffrey Myron of Harvard University appears in today's Los Angeles Times. That was actually yesterday's Los Angeles Times. And some notes on this. First of all, this is something we've already known. We've known since 2005. We've known since the beginning of the drug war that you're spending a lot of taxpayer dollars to lock up nonviolent people who are doing something in the, you know, privacy of their homes and not harming anyone else. And we've also known that we're missing out on taxation revenue from marijuana. But I think whenever we hear these economic reports, we got to remember two things. Number one, it's lowball. It's a lowball estimate. And number two, the money shouldn't matter. The number one point that it's a lowball estimate, right? Because these things just count what we're spending now to lock people up and what we'd make taxing their direct sales or their direct consumption. It doesn't ever take into account how much money would be made from a legal hemp industry, how much tourism there would be to America for people looking to enjoy cannabis. It doesn't look into all of the subsidiary industries that would be born, you know, glass blowers, for example, that would get new jobs thanks to the increased use of cannabis or acceptance of cannabis. It doesn't count any of those things. And on the second point, it really shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter whether we make money or lose money when it comes to marijuana use. It's just wrong to lock up adults for using a plant. Great news here from the Public Policy Institute of California, which has released its September report, Californians and Their Government. They find majority support for legalization of marijuana with Prop 19 at 52%, which is greater support than the report finds for incumbent Senators Barbara Boxer, 42%, Dianne Feinstein, 44%, Senate challenger Carly Fiorina, 35%, gubernatorial candidates Jerry Brown, 37%, and Meg Whitman, 38%. Prop 19 is also the most popular initiative on the November ballot. Of the 52% support among likely voters, Prop 19 enjoys greatest support among young, liberal, Latino Democrats. Democrats support Prop 19 by 63%. Independents support it by 65%, while Republicans oppose it by 62%. Men support Prop 19 by 55%, and women's support has reached 49% versus 44% of women who oppose. Latinos support Prop 19 by 63%, and whites support it at 50%. Adults under age 35 overwhelmingly support Prop 19 at 70%. Folks from 35 to 54 support at 49% versus 44% oppose, while people 55 and older are almost evenly split at 47% to 46%. Interestingly, the people opposed to Prop 19 are more concerned about the outcome than the supporters. 65% of those who oppose it find it very important, while only 42% of supporters feel the same. Yeah, check this out also on our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. I've got a great little graph, and I dug a little farther into the numbers. I found a really interesting fact that stuck out to me. I mentioned the Republicans opposing it at 62%. The Republican support for Prop 19 is 32%. So there's some undecideds, like 7 or 8%. I forget what it is. But there's a 32% support among Republicans. So almost one out of three Republicans supports Prop 19. You know what the approval rating is for Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger among Republicans? 33%. That's right. Marijuana being legalized under Prop 19 is only 1% less popular among Republicans than their own Republican governor. This is a sad update from the Javon Jackson case. We brought you the verdict of the Javon Jackson case yesterday. In that story, the San Diego man who had run a legal dispensary in San Diego had originally been raided and busted and taken to trial in 2009, where he was found innocent of the charges of providing marijuana for sale in violation of Prop 215. The district attorney down there, Bonnie Dumanis, ran another sting against the man. Same tactic, same prosecutor, same basic case, but got a different judge this time. And in 2010, this judge would not allow the man, Javon Jackson, to introduce his medical marijuana status into court for his defense. Jurors were forced to adjudicate the trial as if he was just any old guy on the street who had set up a storefront and started selling marijuana, and unfortunately who was convicted and is facing 6 years in prison. I received this update from Eugene Davidovich from San Diego's Americans for Safe Access. After the verdict was read, Judge Shore told the jurors that their work had been completed and that they could now be excused. Before the jurors left, however, Judge Shore added that the attorneys in the case had a few questions for them and asked them to stick around and give a post-verdict interview if they wished. The interview was conducted outside of the presence of the public, with just about all of the jurors staying behind to talk to the attorneys. Following the post-verdict interview, the public found out that the jurors unanimously said, quote, "We wanted to find a way to let Jackson go, but could not," end quote. The jurors explained that the jury instructions that they were given contained no defense for possession for sale or sales, the very portion that was redacted away by the prosecutor and Judge Shore. Aside from looking for a way to find Jackson not guilty, the jurors all said that although they did not agree with the law as it was given to them, that they still had to respect it, as Judge Shore ordered them to only consider the law that was written in the jury instructions. So, based on this sad update, I want to make this a teachable moment. You are absolutely wrong, jurors. Absolutely wrong. You have the power that is called jury nullification. No matter how guilty someone is, no matter how much compelling evidence there may be, no matter what instructions you are given by a judge, a jury can decide that the application of the law itself is unjust and acquit a defendant. Please learn more about this crucial right of juries. It's something that they can't tell you in the court. The defense attorneys can't bring it up. If they bring it up, they'll be censured. They might even lose their law license. They can be found in contempt of court and put in jail if they mention it. If anyone in the public or reporters or in the courtroom mentions it or brings signs to inform people in the jury, that can cause a mistrial. But it is an important right that we still have in this country that a lot of people don't know. We have the right of jury nullification. Judges hate this because judges want courts to run. You know, they can tell them what to do and how to do it and how it's going to go. They don't like it. Prosecutors definitely don't like it because they want to find you guilty according to the letter of the law, regardless of what extenuating circumstances there may be. The concept of jury nullification predates even the formation of the United States of America. This is an English common law thing that says basically the power of the people as formed as a jury of 12 peers is to ultimately decide the justice of a law, to ultimately decide whether it is fair and applicable to punish someone under our system of justice. So once again, they could find Javon Jackson, you know, had been selling marijuana to everybody and his dog, but if the jury doesn't believe it's right to put him in prison for that, they can vote to acquit. And juries, while the prosecutor, the defense attorney, the judge, the public, all of us could be punished for mentioning jury nullification in the courtroom, you can never be punished for your verdict. There is nothing any court, any prosecutor, any cop in the world can do if you vote to acquit someone in a marijuana case. I'm not even talking here California Prop 215 or anything. Anywhere in the United States, if you get sat on a jury, you can vote to acquit, regardless of how much evidence, how much proof, what the letter of the law is, the jury instructions, anything, you can vote to acquit. And if only 10% of the cases that came to trial for marijuana involved some sort of jury nullification, prosecutors would stop bringing those cases to trial. Please, please, please learn more about this by visiting the Fully Informed Jury Association at FIJA.org. And in our final piece of news, the Oregon Democratic Party officially supports Measure 74 medical marijuana dispensaries. According to Anthony Johnson, co-author and co-chief petitioner of Oregon's Measure 74, the state's Democratic Party has endorsed the passage. I had a typo in my news copy that says massage. That kind of threw me off. Sorry. Has endorsed the passage of a citizen initiative to create a regulated supply system for medical marijuana. As reported in the Oregon Politico, the support of the Democratic Party in this so-called blue state is a huge benefit to the Measure 74 campaign. Johnson believes the party support will help by getting the word out to more voters about the need to enact this system, primarily to help low-income and needy patients access their medicine without turning to the black market. The Democratic Party may be leveraging the overwhelming support among the young, the politically progressive, and registered Democrats for the issue of medical marijuana in order to tip the race for governor. Democratic candidate and former governor John Kitzhaber trails Republican candidate and former NBA center Chris Dudley 49% to 44% in the latest Rasmussen poll. ElectionProjection.com also notes that the normally safe House seat of Democrat David Wu may be competitive. While Oregon is entirely a vote-by-mail state, Democrats may be counting on their voters' support for Measure 74 to increase turn-in of the ballots in an election where Democrats are suffering what CBS News termed an enthusiasm gap. And we'll be talking a little bit about that enthusiasm gap in our radical rant at the end of the show. What they're describing there is how Democrats may stay home and not turn out in droves like they did in 2008 to support President Barack Obama based on their frustration with some of the administration's lack of follow through. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But let's get back to this idea of Democrats endorsing pro-marijuana legislation in order to turn out their base. I've been saying this for a while now as how we look back on 2006, 2002, some of these other midterm elections, and how Karl Rove motivated the GOP base, especially the far-right religious conservative base, by placing gay marriage or anti-gay marriage rights initiatives on ballots all across America. Even here in Oregon, they managed to pass an anti-gay rights initiative. And that was theorized as to turn out more votes for the Republican candidates, as people who may not be so interested in politics, but really morally have the issue with gay people, would show up to vote. And when they vote, they would naturally vote for Republicans on the rest of the ticket. Well, the theory now is that the Democrats may have finally gotten the clue here that young people, you know, people who usually vote Democratic, liberals, you know, people who usually vote Democratic, and Latinos, the largest growing minority base in the country, all support marijuana legalization in Prop 19 and overwhelmingly support medical marijuana and Measure 74 for medical marijuana here in Oregon. And they have finally gotten the clue here that if we excite those people about this issue they care about so much, Perhaps they will also come in and vote the rest of the down-ticket races as Democrats. I surely hope that one of the political parties has figured this out. I know in the case of Governor Gary Johnson, he is traveling all over the country. He recently spoke in Joplin, Missouri at their Hemp Fest, endorsing the idea of marijuana legalization. He's not officially running for president, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he is. And he is actively courting young people and marijuana supporters for his campaign. It'll be interesting to see if we go from a situation where both parties used to fight against marijuana to a situation where both parties are fighting for the voters who like marijuana.
I'm going to be able to tell my grandkids I passed a presidential candidate a joke. He said no.
That's awesome, man. Hey, we got to take a break. I got to fix that typo on my story.
Yeah, you do.
We can't have the massage of a citizen initiative.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Normal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away troubles on my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic jubilee. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and JohnDoeRadio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Goose, not much known about this artist. Is he white? Is he black? Does he come from the ghetto or five-star digs? One thing I do know about Goose is his music is second to none. I'll admit I've had a conversation with Goose before. We can't highlight someone as much as we do on John Doe Radio and have one of his tunes, our theme song, Spin No Seeds, and still not know the guy at all. But I'm not spilling the beans because this is the way Goose likes it. A friend of reform and an artist deep down, you can certainly expect the best from him. Goose has also won a Best Male Artist and Best Hip-Hop Tune for the Marijuana Music Awards for his tune, Cali. You've heard Cali and No Seeds on Normal Show Live, and now you get to hear Off the Pot. You can pick up a copy of your own album from Goose by heading to CD Baby or iTunes. Search for the Salt Mine Sessions, and you've got money in the bank with this artist. Goose is the best artist I've heard and not signed to a label. And I truly do mean that. The best I have ever heard and not signed to any label. Something tells me good enough promotion in his own right. And he doesn't need any label. Music speaks for itself. Goose, Off the Pot. I'm John Doe. Till we meet again. Excuse my sickness and cold. See ya.
The minute that I stops, the minute that rap dies, the minute that dogs fly and pigs blow wings, the minute that the aliens come down in spaceships, hell freezes over and the fat lady sings. gets long till it breaks, I ain't capping. Punch me in the face till I die, I ain't flinching. You listen to the story of my life, this ain't rapping. I've been doing this for years and never had no competition. I just bought a half pound of haze and a strong lighter. I'm not a pothead dog, I'm a songwriter. Songwriters smoke weed all day. I spent 10 years on my feet all day. Now I'm trying to stack chips like Frito-Lay. This is old school hip-hop, we don't play. We just rhymes, go on spit and take a walk with that pop rap bullshit. Go on get the shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time to waste. Shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time. I'm thinking you nerds, better just stick to the birds. I was rhyming when you was too little to think and say word. When you was all scrunched up like cash in the fetal. I was in some dirty rap club, scratching the needle. Inconspicuous, the trick that is thinking it's no thing. You figured it's his necklace, but look at his gold ring. Meticulous, ridiculous, but look at it, so bling. Quick with this, the wickedest, the king of this whole thing. I swear the fuck to God if I don't get up in this vocal booth and show the proof to all these local yokels that don't know the truth and say to me the things that they say to me when they hate me and label me something that I'm not, cause I'm hot. And I don't mean hot in the sense of hopping a fence, selling all my publishing to hop in a Benz. I'ma chill on my tone, yeah, chill on my throne. Fuck y'all, I could probably sell a mill on my own. Get the shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time to waste. Get the shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time to waste. Call yourself producers, to me you just losers. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Better than these deuces and Ebenezer Scrooges. The record business nowadays, just a bunch of mooches and blood-sucking leeches, kids with no class. And I ain't got nothing to give, so don't ask. And I ain't got nothing to say, so don't stare. And I don't give a fuck what you think, I don't care. I'm not open to suggestions, I'm hoping that your questions revolve around the music and things to be. They ain't never gonna put me on no TV show, cause my reality is nothing for these kids to see. Listen, I started out my rap career dissing all the competition till they told me to chill. But on the sequel to the second record, I swear to God these little bitches gonna catch an ass whipping for real. Get the shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time to waste. Get the shit and get yourself off the pot now. Cause things are getting really, really hot now. With 400 songs that I need to record, and there ain't no time to waste, no time to waste.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, One Man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than most anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Amentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Amentano.
I just want to introduce a guy who needs no introduction. It's been a delight to watch this man literally master an incredibly complex cannabis literature over the years. And if he should ever want to waste some time getting a graduate degree, I hope he would consider my lab. Let's welcome Paul Amentano.
Thanks, Mitch. And I really want to thank all the panelists that spoke earlier today, some of those are going to speak later today. When I set out to craft the agenda today on the Cannabis Science Day, I really wanted to take a fairly unconventional approach to talking about medical marijuana. And I think you've gotten a feel for that already from Dr. Sulak's what I would consider to be a revolutionary talk this morning, talking about the endocannabinoid system and what he called the synergistic shotgun, and how cannabis can help maintain our natural physiological balance. That's not typically the way we talk about medical marijuana, but I think it's an important way to begin talking about medical marijuana. And having Dr. Ryman and having Jenny Jenicek talk about cannabis as a potential exit tool when right now we have the federal government claiming just the opposite, that's a gateway drug. And having Jehan talk about the anti-cancer properties in cannabis when for decades we've been told that cannabis actually causes cancer, when we're seeing it's just the opposite. So with that in mind, I want to spend 5 or 10 minutes giving a short presentation that I call Moving Beyond Symptom Management. Because I think the conventional discussion of marijuana as a medicine still today is centered around this belief that marijuana or the compounds in the marijuana plant simply temporarily alleviate symptoms. And certainly there is broad applications for cannabinoids to treat symptoms. No doubt the popularity of this plant right now as a medicine stems from the fact that there are such a wide variety of symptoms that can be treated with marijuana. And many of you are already aware of those. But where I think this discussion really needs to go in the future, and what I think makes marijuana or cannabis or cannabinoid so interesting as potential medicine, is not just their ability to temporarily alleviate symptoms, but in some cases, their ability to go beyond symptom relief and actually treat underlying disease conditions. And we're talking about very significant families of diseases. We're talking about autoimmune disorders like MS and diabetes and Crohn's, which is a gastrointestinal disorder. We're talking about neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's and Lou Gehrig's disease and Parkinson's. As Jehan just talked about, we're talking about cancer. We're not just limiting this discussion to treating the side effects of chemotherapy or temporarily having someone boost their appetite. We're talking about the potential to treat cancer itself. We're talking about MRSA, multidrug-resistant infections, bacterial infections that have mutated to the point where they're now not responsive to conventional medications like penicillin. And as a result, people that are immunocompromised when they come down with these bacterial infections, they tend to die because we don't have the ability to treat or halt that bacteria from spreading. And we're talking about potentially the neurotoxicity and neurotrauma conditions like stroke or traumatic brain injury, conditions where blood and oxygen has been cut off temporarily to the brain, resulting in irreversible cell death. I highlight these families of diseases because in almost every case, these are progressive diseases. These are diseases that are going to get worse and worse over time. And while we've had research in these areas of diseases now, in some cases for many, many decades. And while we have many conventional pharmaceutical medications available to treat patients with these disorders, in almost all cases, those pharmaceutical conventional medications are simply masking symptoms of these diseases. They're not treating the disease itself. Or in some cases, like in chemotherapy, they're treating the disease in such a way that is so toxic to the patient that you often lose the patient to the treatment rather than losing the patient to the disease. So that's why I think it is so important to have this discussion and say cannabis, unlike so many of these conventional medications, not only has the ability to treat symptoms, but actually moderate the course of disease. And moderate the course of disease in diseases right now that we cannot alter, that we don't have the ability to slow down, that in many cases we don't have the ability to increase patients' survival. I highlight multiple sclerosis when I have this discussion because we have the most clinical data on cannabis-based medicines and MS, and not just to treat symptoms. This idea that cannabis or cannabinoids could actually alter the progress of multiple sclerosis, it's not that new an idea. Price and colleagues were writing about it almost a decade ago when they suspected, based on animal models, that cannabis would slow down the neurodegenerative processes that ultimately lead to chronic disability and MS and other diseases that met this same criteria. And then in 2006 and 2007, we have two very important clinical trials published, one by Rogue and colleagues and one by Wade and colleagues. Both these were done in the United Kingdom. Both of these were done using the natural cannabis extract Sativex. In the United Kingdom, when you do a clinical trial, and like in the U.S., most British clinical trials are short-term in duration and their endpoint is a specific symptom. But unlike in the United States, in the United Kingdom, patients can elect to stay on the drug, the investigational drug that's being tested in the trial, after the trial ends. So in both of these cases, patients were using Sativex to treat symptoms of MS for a very short period of time, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. And at the end of that time period, investigators looked at the data and they found that these patients experienced some short-term symptomatic relief. But many of the patients decided that they wanted to stay on the drug because they experienced a short-term relief. And to get into these trials in the UK with MS, you had to have end-of-road multiple sclerosis. These were patients that they were not able to get out of bed on their own. So 2 or 3 years went by, and investigators went back to these patients that now had a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year history using a cannabis-based medication on a daily basis to treat symptoms of MS. And what they found was these patients reported that they continued to find relief from Sativex for MS-induced pain, which is a neuropathic type of pain, which is very difficult to treat. They had relief from spasticity. They had relief from incontinence, which is bladder dysfunction, which is commonly associated with MS. But what was really surprising was not that these patients continued to experience symptomatic relief from cannabis-based medicine, but that these patients reported over time they were taking lower and lower doses of the cannabis-based medicine to maintain the same level of relief that they had experienced at the beginning of this trial. Multiple sclerosis, like many of the diseases I'm going to talk about, is a progressive disease. People live with MS for quite some time, and as a progressive disease, the disease gets more severe over time. That means the symptoms of the disease, the pain, the spasticity, the incontinence, gets more severe over time. That means patients that are taking drugs to treat the symptoms of MS end up taking larger and larger doses of these drugs to maintain the same level of relief. That's not what we're seeing in the patients taking Sativex. They are taking lower doses of a cannabis-based drug while maintaining the same level of relief in a disease that should be getting worse over time. That doesn't seem to be happening in these patients. It appears that the administration or the intervention of a cannabis-based medicine has slowed down the progress of this disease. And to emphasize how significant that is, we really don't have conventional treatments that do that right now. And of course, in addition, the symptoms that these patients do suffer from can also be alleviated by cannabis. So we see in this case this dual effect. But what to me is most important is seeing what appears to be the halting of a very serious progressive disease. Also in the category of autoimmune disorders, we have diabetes. In this case, we're looking at a preclinical trial, and oftentimes when I have this discussion, we're looking at preclinical trials, and for the sake of time, I'm not going to get into the political and even some of the practical reasons why, in some cases, it does make sense to use rat studies, at least initially. One of the reasons that I will say is because you can genetically modify mice and rats to come down with almost any clinical condition you want to examine. In this case, we're looking at rats that were genetically bred to have diabetes. And this would be adult diabetes, which in the rat life cycle would be at 17 weeks. So these are rats that without any intervention whatsoever at 17 weeks will all have diabetes. And in this study, CBD, cannabidiol, this non-psychoactive cannabinoid, was used as an intervention. So they took half the rats and gave them placebo, and they took the other half of the rats and they gave them CBD. And at 17 weeks, not surprisingly, all of the rats that were given the placebo had diabetes. They should. They were genetically bred to have diabetes at 17 weeks. But significantly, 60% of the rats that were given the CBD intervention at 17 weeks did not have diabetes. So once again, we see a physiological change in the course of a disease. Without the intervention, they all have diabetes. With the intervention, more than half didn't have diabetes. And as anybody who has studied diabetes can tell you, we don't have conventional medications to alter the course of diabetes. You are diagnosed with diabetes, adult diabetes, your doctor is going to recommend that you engage in certain lifestyle changes, get more exercise, lose some weight, change your diet. Nobody's going to give you a drug to halt the course of this disease because that doesn't exist. But yet we see this physiological change when we have a cannabinoid administered. Crohn's, I said this is a gastrointestinal disorder. In this case, once again, we're looking at a preclinical trial. They take human tissue that's inflamed, tissue from the gastrointestinal tract lining. When you administer cannabinoids to the tissue, you see closure or relief of the inflammation to a degree that's much greater than you would see without the intervention. You know, anecdotally, patients suffering from Crohn's for decades have been telling us that marijuana alleviates their pain. Here we see a physiological response as to why that would be the case. And I really want to emphasize, when I go through these slides, I emphasize the physiological response. I think it's important to stress that because critics of medical marijuana, I think, have this belief that the patient isn't really better. It's all in their head. They just feel like they're better. The reality is we'd have physiological explanations for why the patient is, in fact, getting better. This isn't something that is in their head because of the euphoric side effect of THC. They are feeling better because their body is having a physiological response that is making them better. Alzheimer's disease falls into the category of neurodegenerative disorders. We have conventional pharmaceuticals that we might give patients with Alzheimer's disease, and they treat symptoms of Alzheimer's, but they don't treat the underlying disease condition. Yet we see that when we administer THC that inhibits an enzyme responsible for the buildup of a certain type of plaque in the brain that right now we consider, to the best of our understanding, is the primary marker for Alzheimer's disease, and that THC, this cannabinoid, does it in a way that is superior to the available drugs that are conventionally available right now. And we see that phrase again and again, not just that cannabis works, not just that cannabinoids induce this physiological response, but they do so in a way that's better than existing drugs do. And I highlight this statement from Campbell and colleagues in the British Journal of Pharmacology because I think it is so significant. This comes from the abstract of the review that Campbell and colleagues put out looking at the potential effects of cannabinoids to treat these sort of neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. And I stress it came from the abstract because the abstract is where you put your findings of fact. This isn't what Campbell and colleagues believe to be theoretical. This is what they believe to be true. And I premise these two sentences by, of course, reiterating to everybody that we right now live in a society where the federal government says that all of the cannabinoids in the marijuana plant, aside from synthetic THC, are classified as a Schedule I controlled substance, which means by definition they have no accepted medical use in treatment. Not for pain, not for glaucoma, not for nausea, not for appetite, for nothing. And certainly not for the conditions we've been talking about today. Yet, parallel that, or contrast that reality, if you will, with what Campbell and colleagues say, when they say that the compounds in marijuana offer a multifaceted approach for the treatment of Alzheimer's by providing neuroprotection, that means they protect the brain, and reducing neural inflammation, that means they can reduce swelling in the brain, while simultaneously supporting the brain's intrinsic repair mechanisms by enhancing neurogenesis, neurogenesis, of course, being the creation, stimulation of new neurons, something Dr. Sulak talked about earlier this morning. This offers a pharmacological approach for the treatment of Alzheimer's that may be more efficacious or more effective than current treatment regimens. So here within two sentences, we have the federal government's entire lie about marijuana exposed for everyone to see. Not only does marijuana not have medical utility, it has medical utility in so many vast areas, including some of these very, very significant conditions. ALS, I brought Greg Carter in here, and he's going to talk about his recent work with ALS. Lou Gehrig's disease is a very significant, very serious illness. We do not have conventional drugs to increase survival rates in humans who are diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. Yet, once again, if we take mice and they are genetically bred to come down with ALS, and we administer a THC as an intervention both before and after the symptoms of ALS, we see in this animal model that we stave disease progression and increase survival compared to controls. In other words, you take rats that are bred to have ALS, you give them a placebo, the disease gets worse and worse, and they die from the disease. You administer a cannabis-based intervention, the disease does not progress at the rate it otherwise would, and thus you increase survival in animals. Yet we don't have human clinical trials even investigating the use of cannabis as a medicine in this indication. And Greg Carter has a terrific paper that he just published that he is going to talk about with you in a moment that explains the mechanism of action that gives you the physiological reason why we see this effect in animals when cannabis is used as an intervention and why we likely see it in humans with this crippling terminal illness. Jehan spoke about cancer, so I really am not going to say too much about this other than he was talking about GBM, which I wanted him to speak about because this is one of the most aggressive forms of cancer that there is. My understanding is that most patients with GBM, they don't even give chemotherapy to. They administer radiation because the life expectancy is expected to be so short. And as he talked about, we see this anti-cancer property in this very aggressive type of cancer, but we also see the same anti-cancer sort of results in different cancer lines as well, like prostate cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, skin cancer, cancer of the pancreas, lymphoma, and several others as well. He talked about the mechanisms of action. He talked about apoptosis. He talked about the inhibition of the angiogenesis, so I'm not going to go over that again. I will just cite what Manuel Guzman and his team wrote in Nature magazine now, I think in 2003 or 2004, almost, you know, a decade ago. This is in one of the most prestigious scientific magazines anywhere in the world, and he explained this entire process. He said cannabinoids inhibit tumor growth in laboratory animals. They do so by modulating key cell signaling pathways, thereby inducing direct growth and arrest and death of tumor cells, as well as by inhibiting angiogenesis and metastasis. Cannabinoids are selective anti-tumor compounds, and that's really the most important part. It's one thing that they just have the ability to kill cells, but what's most important is they have the ability to kill cancer cells while leaving the healthy cells alone, as he talks about when he says that they can kill tumor cells without affecting their non-transformed counterparts. Chemotherapy doesn't do that, folks. And as he mentioned, there really hasn't been advancements in chemotherapy or treatments like chemotherapy in decades now. But we've known for almost a good 30 years that the compounds of marijuana possess these selective anti-cancer properties. MRSA. There was a study that was published in 2008 out of Italy where researchers isolated five specific compounds in marijuana. They introduced those topically to the point of the bacterial infection, and what they found was that the antibacterial properties in marijuana were significant enough that they reduced skin colonization by these multi-drug-resistant pathogens. And that, of course, is significant because, by definition, these are bacteria that we don't have conventional medications to halt their spread. That's why they're considered to be multi-drug-resistant. And particularly when you look at our nation's hospitals, this is a really serious problem. About every year, 20,000 people die annually from MRSA-related infections in the United States because we don't have sufficient conventional medications to treat it. The final slide I'm going to talk about is neurotoxicity, neurotrauma conditions. These are conditions like stroke and traumatic brain damage, as I said, where blood and oxygen supply is cut off to the brain, resulting in permanent cell death. The key in these cases, of course, is to get patients an antioxidant that will begin taking effect almost immediately because time is of the essence here. And once again, we have animal models showing that when you administer different types of cannabinoids, whether it's CBD or THC or others, in animal models of stroke, alcohol poisoning, and other types of instances where blood and oxygen is cut off to the brain, you see this neuroprotective effect. We saw it with CBD and ethanol-induced brain injury. We saw it with CBD and stroke. HU-211 is a synthetic agonist. This was a study done in Israel. It actually was a clinical trial. We saw better neurological outcomes in patients that suffered from TBI when they were given this agonist, and it was administered within close proximity to the time of the traumatic event. And then I want to highlight the study from Aidan Hampson and colleagues. This was done at National Institutes of Health, I believe, in Rockville in 1998, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. In this case, they compared and contrasted THC and CBD with vitamin E, which, as Jehan said earlier, is considered to be conventionally a very potent antioxidant. And what they found was that the cannabinoids were protective against glutamate neurotoxicity in a manner that was actually much more effective than what were considered to be some of the best conventional antioxidants at the time. And this was considered by many researchers and many individuals that work for the federal government in a research capacity as a very interesting finding. And you don't have to take my word for it. You just have to see what Aidan Hampson and some of his colleagues did shortly after this study was published. They took out a patent on the use of natural occurring cannabinoid compounds as antioxidants and as neuroprotectants. And they were awarded that patent on October 7, 2003. It was granted to the United States of America as represented by the Department of Health and Human Services. So in other words, the very same government that right now keeps marijuana and all of its active compounds in the plant defined as a Schedule I substance without any medical utility at all also holds a patent on the use of these same substances to treat very serious and a broad range of medical conditions. And that ought to, in a nutshell, sum up just how fucked up and hypocritical this goddamn policy is. And that's why we're all here, to try and put an end to this lie that we've been living under for decades. So with that, I want to turn it back over to the panel. And like I said, I really hope all of you, when you leave today, begin thinking and begin talking about medical marijuana in a different manner than you may have thought to talk about it before, because this is a very serious medicine. To coin a phrase that's used way too often, this is a game changer, folks. So let's talk about it.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back to the show, 55 After. Time for a short little radical rant here. And this one goes out to President Obama and the folks out there in the in Washington who are coming out against the left. You may have heard some of the comments of Robert Gibbs made the comment of the professional left is always griping, and Vice President Biden came out and said the Democratic base needs to stop whining, and Rahm Emanuel, the outgoing White House chief of staff, even called us fucking retarded. That was his actual quote. I don't usually cuss on the air, but that was his quote. That's what he called us. And it reminds me that, you know, the Republicans never lash out at their base that way. They never do. They court their base. They give them everything they want. You know, the haves and the have-mores. And they make sure that they get those votes. But right now there's this enthusiasm gap they're talking about in the media about how Democrats might not turn out to the elections like they did in 2008, because there's just no enthusiasm for the president or his policies or what's going on. And I'd just like to point out to you guys out there in the progressive left, all you environmentalists and gay rights folks and union leaders and people that wanted public option health care and so on, welcome to the party. This is something those of us here out here in the old cannabis community have known for quite a while, and it was encapsulated perfectly in this little clip I'd like to play for you. When President Obama asked like four or five different times online, had these polls, you know, open for questions asking, what do the American people want to change? What issue should be at the top? And what came out number one every time, and in the top 10, top 100, overwhelmingly dominated, had something to do with ending the war on drugs, legalizing marijuana, and the such. This was President Obama's reaction to it.
Can I just interrupt, Jared, before you ask the next question, just to say that, you know, we took votes about which questions were going to be asked. And I think 3 million people voted, or 3.5 million people voted. I have to say that there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high, and that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. And I don't know what this says about the online audience, but I just want, I don't want people to think that this was a fairly popular question. We want to make sure that it was answered. The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy to grow our economy.
So we've known about this for quite a while. That's something out here in the cannabis community we call the snicker, or the chuckle, actually, in that he makes this offhand joke, you know, I don't know what that says about the online community. Do you know how much the online community contributed to get Barack Obama elected president? I mean, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. The liberal bloggers, you know, the Daily Kozes and the Fire Dog Lakes and all those type of liberal bloggers, all the progressives who organized online at his website, his groundbreaking, you know, amazing campaign website, mybarackobama.com, all the people that had the meetups and the little group meetings and the Facebook meetups and everything online that brought in more small dollar contributions to a presidential campaign than had ever been recorded in history, and also giving Obama the biggest campaign war chest of any presidential campaign in history, I believe. And to turn on the left like that, well, it's no surprise to us because we realized for a long time that Mr. Obama's policies can shift and wobble a little bit. Why, it was just back in 2006, I think it was, 2004, when he was running for Senate, when he said, the war on drugs is an utter failure and we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. But now, when asked about legalization or decriminalization or even medicalization, it's a chuckle, it's a laugh, it's a dismissal wave of the hand. Well, Mr. Obama, you're about to get a really big lesson in politics, and you're about to learn that the thing you should not do is piss off your base. You're going to find this out, and you're trying to scapegoat us, but you watch. When Prop 19 passes in November in California, and when Democrats in California get a boost in the polls because of that, when Measure 74 passes in Oregon, and the Democrats in Oregon at the polls get a boost because of that, people are going to figure out that there are votes to be had in the cannabis community.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, stick around for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to talk about your concerns about Prop 19 and more news and your calls. For Ganja John, Cannabis Carry, and Radical Russ, take care of each other, Tokers.